Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
This is an Odyssey original.
This is Coronavirus Daily. I'm Charles Feldman.
I'm Mike Simpson from the KNX Odyssey Studios in L.A. You know all the plastic and plexiglass barriers everywhere, stores, offices meant to keep people apart, keep us safe. They might be kind of useless.
COVID is back in New Zealand, and there's no messing around. It's on lockdown again, but this time over just a single case.
Washington State's going further than others when it comes to teacher vaccinations.
And a school district here in L.A. that may be going even further, requiring students to be vaccinated.
We start, though, with the plastic barriers. William Bonfleth is professor of architectural engineering at Penn State. Professor, is the plastic barrier really useful? We see them everywhere, and if they are useful, useful for what?
I think if it's helpful at all, it's if you would happen to be, say, within 3 feet of each other and one of you is infected, and it may stop some large droplets that would be able to cover the distance between you like projectiles. You know, that's the high end of the size range, though, and not really what we mean when we're talking about aerosols and airborne transmission.
Yeah, so talk to us a little bit about what you did find, because what you just said, you know, it protects against the big stuff, and we think, okay, let's put in the perspective salad bar, right? This is why those are there, in case I sneeze or cough on the salad, the rest of the people behind me are going to be okay. But when we're dealing with COVID and we have these all over the place, and we do have aerosolized droplets, real tiny stuff floating around like a cloud, is that where it doesn't make much sense to have these things?
I think it not only doesn't make much sense in terms of perhaps not being effective, it's also been demonstrated that if you have too many of these things dividing up a space in ways that weren't intended, it can actually interfere with the airflow and with the removal of aerosol contaminants from the air by the ventilation systems and air filters and other things that you might have put there. So it's a very uncertain benefit at best, unless we're talking about close range transmission. I think if you put them in a few places where you're going to have people face-to-face at short distance, that could be helpful. But say in a restaurant, surrounding every table by partitions is likely to do more harm than good.
Does that apply also for outdoor restaurants?
Well, it depends on the definition of outdoors. It depends on how many sides of an outdoor dining area are enclosed. You tend to have higher ventilation rates there than you would get indoors. So it would be something that you would have to evaluate situationally. A lot of outdoor dining really is outdoors. But if you say have three sides enclosed, that's still practically an indoor environment.
When it's doing more harm than good, is it kind of twofold? Number one, the air can't move through the room and push stuff out. So that means that number two, if someone is breathing out, particles that aren't good for us, that's just kind of going to sit there in whatever pod they're in, and then the next guy's going to come in, sit in that.
Well, yeah, you've sort of hit on two things there. You know, one is that it interferes with the airflows, it can remove contaminants, and also it does tend to collect them and concentrate them. And so you start to develop a larger and larger highly contaminated zone around someone who might be infected. And then the other thing is that aerosols can flow around these partitions pretty easily. So if the airflow patterns are not favorable, you may have the false sense that that contamination is being prevented from moving from one place to another, and it's actually just flowing right around it.
So if businesses were really interested in the health of their employees to protect them from COVID, would their money better be spent on improving ventilation, which, of course, is a lot more money, and I suspect the reason why lots of companies opt not to do that?
Well, I think the important thing in risk management is layering, and I need to correct it. It's not American Society of Mechanical Engineers, it's ASHRAE, American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers, that has developed all of this guidance. But layers matter. So follow public health guidance, wear the mask, distance, practice reasonable hygiene measures. Then ventilation is the first thing that we look at, along with better filtration for preventing exposure at a distance. We need to do some things to prevent short-range exposure, some things to prevent aerosol exposure, and they work together. And in fact, you know, if everyone is wearing a mask, that blocks these droplets too. So that's a measure that doesn't involve putting partitions everywhere, that helps accomplish the same objective, and it reduces the amount of the smaller particles that's going into the air. So we really need to think of this sort of Swiss cheese approach that's been promoted during the pandemic, because it really is the best way to get the optimal result at the lowest cost.
William Bonfleth, professor of architectural engineering, Penn State University.
New Zealand has mostly escaped the worst of this pandemic. It helps to be an island country in the South Pacific, but it also has had strict lockdowns and quarantine rules.
Back into lockdown over one case recently, just one. Dr. Brian Cox, epidemiologist and professor of preventative and social medicine at the University of Otago in Wellington, New Zealand. So, doctor, how is locking down over just one case being received over there?
We're very keen to do just that. Very early on in this pandemic, we were able to successfully eradicate the first outbreak that we had, and through a lockdown process very early on, which lasted for about 4 weeks. And we've had repeated small outbreaks since, usually, or some of them reasonably large, but some outbreaks since, mainly through a leakage through their quarantine and isolation facilities out into the community, which happens from time to time, and we've worked very hard to try and reduce that as much as possible. So we've went 170 days since the last community case until just a few days ago, and the country's very keen to try and go through a process of eradicating it yet again.
So what exactly, what's involved in the lockdown? How draconian is it?
Well, we have some advantages, and most New Zealanders live in their own house on their own property. The lockdown means that people can't go to work unless they're part of an essential service. The essential services are quite restricted. They're healthcare facilities, drugstores, supermarkets, gas stations. And that's about it. So very little happens while we're in lockdown. There's still a lot of people. I think it's still about 500,000 people who are actually still going to work through the lockdown process. But otherwise, you can't really go out. You're not supposed to leave your house. You can walk in your neighborhood, providing you keep a good distance from everybody else. We essentially sit it out for a period. Even when you go to the supermarket, you have to stay in a queue. You have to stay at least 2 meters away from the person in front of you. And the supermarkets have arrows all the way through. You can only go through in one direction all the way through and keep your distance from everybody else and work it through that way. So that's what we've instituted and got used to. There are a lot of advantages we know in being able to eradicate it again, it means that once it's eradicated, we can go back to having our usual sport and usual activities and in very much a very quite normal way.
What's the vaccination rate there? Because the criticism has been it's low or it's been too slow, and that's why you have to do this, because the vaccines aren't high enough.
No, we would do it anyway. Once you get a community outbreak, it's important to block its ability to jump from one group of people to another group of people, because that's where it's weak. It's weak. Once it gets into a group that are quite close, it's able to spread within the group relatively easily. But it has a little bit of trouble jumping from one group of people to another group of people. So once you go into lockdown, everybody's essentially just in one group, and the virus has trouble finding another group before it peters out within the specific group. So it works very well and very effectively.
But what is the vaccination rate, though?
Oh, it's quite low. I can't recall exactly, but it's probably only about the 20% mark, maybe a little higher than that.
All right, here's where I'm going with that question, because there are a lot of people, for example, in the U.S. who are saying, well, wait a minute, we're vaccinated, so we're supposed to be okay, but now we're being told because of continued spread, we still need to wear masks, we still need to maintain social distancing, that sort of thing. So I'm wondering if when your vaccination rate goes up to, say, 50, 60, maybe even 70%, do you think people will be as willing to go along with these temporary lockdowns?
I think they will, in the sense that we know the Delta variant, for example, and some other variants that may come in the future are able to infect people even though they've been vaccinated. Sure, their illness isn't severe, but in general, but still that is a concern. So we've always taken an approach that there's no single solution. And so we are prepared to adopt multiple different strategies at the same time. And we find that that is much more effective than just saying, oh, we'll rely on vaccination, or we'll just rely on masks, or we'll just rely on social distancing. You have to do, it's a package. And in New Zealand, we're actually quite cohesive in the sense, I think we're generally all committed to it. And we can go back to arguing with each other later. We actually feel that the threat of the disease is far greater than any disputes we may have about X, Y, and Z.
And does that mean, though, that you guys are going to be pretty isolated for a while, right, if you're going to try and ride this out longer and have quarantine rules and all that for people coming in?
Sure. They have now got a guideline in terms of how we will open up slowly to the rest of the world. And that will start certainly in the new year. I think the government's considering trying to do it, some of it before then. So we will, once our vaccination rate gets up to a certain level, and we feel that that will be achieved before the end of the year, up to a level that's very high, up over 70%, and they're actually aiming to get close to 100% as we can. At that point, we will then start opening up travel between what we would then label as relatively low-risk countries with relatively low rates of disease, and slowly step it up and see how that works, whether we then become vulnerable to outbreaks or whatever. And then so through the early part of next year, we will be testing that out, and we will hope to slowly, over the first half of next year, phase in a more easy relationship with other countries so that people don't have to go into quarantine.
I am curious about enforcement. Who enforces the lockdown and how well is it enforced?
We have quite a good Public Health Act, in the sense that the Director General of Health, through the Public Health Act, can actually make quite draconian, if you like, edicts that the police then enforce by law if necessary. Usually people are prepared to give this a go and prevent this current outbreak from getting any bigger, and certainly hope to eradicate it again.
Brian Cox, Dr. Brian Cox, epidemiologist, professor of preventative and social medicine, University of Otago in Wellington, New Zealand. Doctor, thanks for talking to us.
Washington is the first state in the country to mandate public school teachers and staff be vaccinated with no option for testing. That's further than what California and Hawaii are doing.
What happens when the teachers don't get vaccinated, if there are some? Chris Reichdahl, Washington State Superintendent of Public Instruction. So, Chris, why now option to test and then opt out?
Yeah, our state's going the route of obviously requiring the vaccine as a condition of employment. We do offer a medical or religious exemption. We walked right up to this testing opportunity, and I think what our public health officials really concluded is it's a good option. It just isn't the best. A face covering reduces those droplets. A vaccine is obviously the best. Testing regime, even once a week, means that for 5 or 6 days, you know, you could be exposing folks if you're COVID positive before you get your next test. There may be delays. They just didn't feel it was one of the better measures. It's an option for districts, but it's not a way out of the vaccine requirement in our state.
And what sort of feedback are you getting?
You know, folks really want to know the details of our religious exemption, but not a whole lot of pushback on not having a testing option. I think part of the reason is in our state, 2/3 of our school districts have already voluntarily adopted some kind of testing regime. So that's an added layer for them. But nobody was really clamoring for that, at least not so far in our state.
Do you expect people to try to slip through on their religious exemption maybe when they don't really think it's pertinent to them? I mean, we've seen some churches saying, I'll give you a letter and then you can see if that works. You know, take it up there and see if they buy it. I don't know.
Yeah, these things are always really tough, aren't they? Because it really does boil down to the, you know, attestation and sort of conviction of the individual. And I don't believe that anyone in government should second guess them. But it is a religious exemption. It will require them to describe their belief system, unlike, say, the medical exemption, where they really do need a doctor consultation. So, yeah, we're always down to human beings doing human things. I really believe it'll help get more people vaccinated. I think folks will use this with integrity, and undoubtedly there'll be some who don't, and that's kind of life.
Yeah, I was going to ask what the vaccination rate is up there.
You know, we have an informal process because we can't ask individuals, of course, to fully disclose that. But our district reviews statewide average. We think we're well in excess of 70% for educators, maybe more than 75%. Our entire adult population, age 12 and above, is over 70% now. About 50%, though, for our school age population only. So there's definitely some differences there. And, of course, like you all, very big regional differences. Eastern part of our state, quite a bit lower than the western part of our state.
How long do the staffers have to either, you know, get with the program or, like, what it is, dismissal?
So August... October 18th is the drop date here, which really means you have to have your second dose if you're Moderna or Pfizer by October 4th. And then there's the 2-week waiting period that is advised by the providers. So really, it's October 4th. You need your shots or you need to seek one of those exemptions. After that, you're going to be terminated.
And I'm also wondering why maybe there isn't an answer to it, but it seems like this process is going a lot smoother where you are than I suspect it would go in a lot of other places, like maybe here.
Well, it doesn't feel like that when you're in the middle of it, but I like the question. I think grass is always a little greener. We certainly have some folks who are, you know, pretty frustrated by this. A lot of claims about individual liberty. We clearly worked our way through prior court cases on this. It's really important you offer these exemptions to folks, you know, that they can meaningfully apply for. And that's what makes it very straightforward. It's still hard, though, right? We have a history in our state of making sure students are vaccinated. This is very new for our educators and our bus drivers, custodians, all of them. So it's not going to be without its bumps, but Delta is just a different beast. And we clearly have to take measures even higher than we did last year, where our state effectively stayed masked for the entire year.
Well, it comes down to the bona fides, like you said earlier, right? True belief is a tenet of your faith, or true medical conditions documented, that kind of stuff is the pass and the rest is not.
That is exactly what the framework is here. I really trust folks will do the right thing. And I do believe this will motivate a whole lot more people when they finally have to make that decision, right? They're going down one side of this mountain or the other. I think they're going to pick vaccination in large numbers, and we'll never get 100%. That's okay. But we got to get better than 70, 75%. I think we'll do it.
Chris Reichdahl, Washington State Superintendent of Public Instruction.
Coming up after this short break, one school district is mandating vaccinations for kids. States are requiring teachers to be vaccinated, but what about kids? Well, one school district here in the L.A. area thinks that's a great idea.
Culver City Unified's mandating students 12 plus get vaccinated, teachers and staff too. So how is this going to go over with parents? So we talked to one KNX traffic anchor, Brian Douglas, parent of a high school senior in the district. So, Brian, how does your son feel about it and how did you feel about it?
Okay, well, I'll start with him. He could care less. He's 17. He's vaccinated right now. How I feel about it, you know, I found out last night about dinner time that this was actually going to be a mandate where kids actually needed to be vaccinated. And I'll be honest with you, in this COVID world, nothing really surprises me anymore. I wasn't surprised. It was more of an interest to me about what the outcome of this is going to be, what the reaction is going to be from more so, not so much the kids, but the parents, and I'll explain here because for the most part, my son's friends, they're all vaccinated. All the parents are vaccinated. There are some in Culver City that are not vaccinated that have kids in the school. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And I think this is the consensus for most of us, at least friends that I know in Culver City. I think for the most part, we're fine with this mandate. But what's going to happen to the kids who, let's say their parents don't want them to get vaccinated? What's going to happen to them if they say, look, mom, dad, I want to stay at this school. I don't want to go to independent study, as what they're thinking about doing. I want to stay with my friends. But the parents say, hey, no, you're not getting vaccinated. We don't believe in it. I think that's going to be really the issue that we need to look at. That's going to hurt the kids more than anything else.
Yeah, especially if there's no testing option. But as we heard, you know, in the last segment from the guy from Washington saying, the reason we're not doing the testing here is because Delta moves so fast that you can't catch it. It could be day three or four and you got your test from Monday, but now it's Friday and you're spreading it around the classroom and you're all so close together as it is.
Yeah, and it, you know, this whole testing thing, I mean, I understand why they do it, but like you said, and my wife is, I mean, she runs three schools in South LA, a high school, middle, elementary, hundreds and hundreds of students. They're going through the whole testing process. And again, it's needed. I get it. But like you said, so you get tested today. The result is, hey, I don't have COVID, but you actually get it or you start to show symptoms, you know, the day after. I mean, what happens? Then you spread it. Then you have to do the contact tracing and it becomes real. It's complicated, you know, this whole thing.
The superintendent's going to be joining us in a minute. But Brian, I want to get your gauge on when you actually learned of this. You said last night, because a lot of people, was there like a lead up and letters going around? Or, because a lot of people saw the tweet last night from the district saying, we're going to do this and students are on the list. And everybody went, oh, wow. Yeah. And this is why we all say this is likely the first, because it kind of just happened.
I didn't know. We didn't see any lead up, or at least I didn't. And of course, you know, working in a newsroom like this, we hear a lot of stuff before the general public does. But no, I had no idea. And again, it didn't shock me. But again, it's more of an interest factor. It's how this is all going to play out, especially for the kids.
All right. Brian Douglas, our traffic anchor, has a high school senior, Culver City Unified. Brian, thanks. Kwok Tran, superintendent of the Culver City Unified School District. Superintendent, thanks for being with us. So why you guys going? And what we've been saying is we believe it's further than anybody else, right? First in the nation to do this for the students as well.
I thank you very much for this opportunity to address this question. I don't know if we are first in the nation, nor are we first in the state. I just believe that we are obligated to take all available measures to ensure that the safety opening school is actually to make it safe for everyone returning to our school today. So the rationale is basically this. If I may, since the very beginning of the pandemic, three things have been proven to work in terms of blunting or preventing the transmission of the virus. And they work even better when you kind of layer in one top of the other. Wearing masks is one. Testing regularly the population so we can find out exactly the virus presence or not presence in the community. And the third part is vaccination. Any kind of best measures out there is basically depending on how you deploy these three measures, testing, masking, and vaccination. And I truly believe that at this point, the doubt and the fear should be replaced with the science behind these three effective measures, including vaccination. And vaccination has been recommended by CDC that to protect those who are younger than 12 that are unable to receive the vaccine right now, those who are eligible, 12 and above, should be vaccinated to provide that extra protection for the younger generation or the younger children.
How do you gauge the parent reaction if you're going to ballpark it, pro versus Con, who's in the minority?
As of right now, the amount of emails that I have received, as well as email returning to us from our board of trustees who received the email, is about 24 the measures and about one who would oppose to it. So it's, the ratio is about 20-1. So as of right now, and this is no way a scientific
right
survey. It's an anecdotal. You know. Yeah.
How are you dealing with people who want exemptions because of medical, or more importantly, I guess, their religious reasons?
Well, absolutely, that's an important part of our moving forward. The first day is today, and the statements are basically that we are planning to begin rolling out all the options, all of the vaccination opportunities, testing opportunities, as well as masking protocols. And we're hoping to be able to reach the full compliance by November 19. So between now and November 19, we will be able to sit down with our team members and input from the community, as well as our board of trustees guidance, to make sure that we create, lack of other words, options, other ways to provide instruction program that will meet the needs of our children without having to force that concern, just like you said, exemption based on perhaps religious, we'll call it the truly deeply held religious beliefs, as well as medical, you know, pre-existing conditions and so on and so forth. But we would do that carefully, not to the point of, again, compromising the risk of the larger population that is currently attending school.
All right. Kwok Tran, Superintendent, Culver City Unifieds.
A church in the Sacramento area has decided to help people who are vehemently opposed to the vaccines. The pastor of Destiny Christian Church says the church will offer religious exemption letters to people who don't want the vaccine. The pastor says the vaccine poses a morally compromising situation for many people of faith. The church last year defied statewide health orders by continuing to hold indoor services.
You can find this Odyssey original on the Odyssey app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit DetectTheSOS.com to learn more.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.